Hey, this is Mike Cashew, and you're listening to the Brute Strength Podcast. This week's guests are Pat Estes and Aaron Davis of Train Adapt Evolve in Austin, Texas. These guys are two of the best strength and conditioning coaches that I know, and we actually go in a lot of different directions in this show. We talk about basic principles and fundamentals of strength and conditioning, which a lot of coaches nowadays are missing or have never even been taught because they're always trying to do the new flashy training modality. Ironically, we also talk about a lot of the new technologies that these guys are using, like the Omega Wave, PRI, and something called the Spyro Tiger. We finish by talking about coaching and basically how to become a master coach. Like I said, these are two of the best that I've ever met. And part of it is because of their curiosity and their mindset in general about coaching. So this one's packed full of useful things, whether you're, you know, an up and coming athlete, competitor, or a young coach wanting to develop. Enjoy the show. What's up, everyone? This is Mike Cashew, and this is the Brute Strength Podcast. I'm here with Pat Estes and Aaron Davis of Train Adapt Evolve. We're at CrossFit Jakarhu, and it's roughly as hot as the inside of a ball sack, but we've got a little wind on us, as you can hear. Guys, first off, sorry I'm late for setting this thing up, but thanks for so much for making some time to do this.
Yeah, no worries. No problem.
It's good.
So for everybody listening to this, I came to know these guys after training or while training at CrossFit Jakarhu leading up to regionals. And within my first session with these guys, I noticed that there's you guys approach the body and an athlete in a different way, in a very unique way. And you look at athletes as an entire system rather than just looking at the body or just looking at one joint. You look at the system, how it's physiologically connected. And I think it's really interesting because I think a lot of coaches out there are, their assessment consists of maxes and PRs, and then they're not looking at the body as a whole. Even at Brute, we have a long way to go in that realm. So I think it's a really interesting conversation that we can have. I think you also have some really unique tools that you use that I think are really going to be of interest to some athletes and coaches out there. So first off, I want to start with this idea of treating the athlete as a system. Have you guys always looked at athletes that way? And if not, how did you come to, or where did you kind of come from, and what changed?
Yeah, I mean, I would say starting out like every other coach, it's all about performance metrics, right? It's the 1RMs, it's the times on the track, right? It's power outputs. And what happened, at least from my perspective, was that I chased that a lot, and I realized I was kind of underserving certain things. And then when I realized when I can look at everything as a whole, you could drive a lot of these performance outputs a lot better, and I can keep the athlete healthier for longer, right?
What do you mean by performance outputs?
Well, just like anything. So say whether it's in like CrossFit, right? Like it could be an open workout, right? Time-based, it could be 1RMs. If it's like some of my sprinters, it could be like obviously the times on the 100 meter dash, mm-hmm. or the 40, or it could just even be jump protocols, using either metrics on like velocity based stuff, but those are all things that are like the flashy stuff,
right?
But I think the big thing is like, how can we see where the athlete is physiologically and then also emotionally, and then tailor up programs that are best suited for their internal environment, and then all of a sudden you start seeing both health and then also performance kind of climb at the same time. Where sometimes you'll see performance climb, but then health will start deteriorating. And now their performance window is only, maybe a couple weeks. Where I want a performance window, especially if we look at CrossFit or even sprinting, you need them to be, that performance window to be open for, maybe 10, 12, maybe even CrossFit, if we think about it. The games are in when? August?
Yep.
I mean, from May to August, you're looking at a pretty big performance window.
Right.
Right? So.
So you said you used to look at purely performance, yep. Performance metrics. So what changed for you? What was there, an experience or a mentor or a course?
I would say I mean, I started at a CrossFit gym here in Austin early on, and I just started seeing people's lifestyle, and they weren't matching up with all the work they were putting in the gym. And some of them would come down with certain issues, health issues. And in my head, I was like, there has to be a way I can screen this. Do they need to be in here 6 days a week doing 2 hour sessions or trying to get as much as they can in? And I think with my early, when I was 13, 14 years old, a coach used the Omega Wave machine that they now use to do athlete monitoring in professional sports. And in my head, I was like, that will give me a tool to assess day to day kind of physiology, or at least the readiness with all my athletes. And so that's kind of where I started gravitating to that. And that's really been a key piece to our, you know, assessment process and our day to day with our athletes.
And Pat, you're coming from more strength and conditioning background, like a collegiate strength and conditioning background. What was your kind of evolution to reach this point?
Well, I would say it definitely started with my mentor, Todd Wright, who's now the head strength coach for the 76ers. And him and Logan Schwartz, when I was at Texas, did a great job of actually teaching us chain reaction biomechanics. And that's kind of where my evolution of the evaluation process started, was just watching them watch people just walk through the door and being like, this person needs this, this person needs that. And really understanding, the more that you learn about chain reaction biomechanics, the more you understand what a person, that individual needs. And it's not just those, like we all started with, just doing those performance metrics. How much do you bench? How much do you squat? It's, oh, do you have hip internal rotation that you can use functionally? You know, how do you move, you know, your body in three-dimensional space? So it kind of gravitated from this, it kind of gravitated from just doing this kind of 3D movement screen to, okay, well, how does this person's structure affect their function? And that's where me and Aaron use a little bit of some PRI table orthopedic assessments and try to get a blueprint of where the athlete is. And then from there, we'll do a three-dimensional movement screen and kind of see what transfers over. So is what we're seeing on the table transferring to this athlete's function? Because structure dictates function. So I think I got to give credit to Todd and Logan Schwartz there, and then just kind of taking different courses, like you said, and just take a little piece here, take a little piece there, and kind of make it your own.
I'm going to translate the Southern accent. He's saying chain reaction biomechanics. So I want to get into that a little more. So my first day that I laid down on y'all's table, you looked at my leg length, you watched my gait, you looked at a lot of things that I rarely see, especially a strength and conditioning coach look at, right? Maybe one of those variables in a chiropractor's office or physical therapy office. Why are you guys looking at that? And do you see any kind of pushback from athletes, especially competitors, when you're looking at things like that?
Well, can we say we probably do it to save our asses? I mean, just a little bit to understand, like, one, I mean, can we load the person? Or in this case with you guys, right? Like, is the loads we know you're going to experience, is the structure in a sound place where you can handle those loads, right? And then if we really think about it, especially in CrossFit, joint position is going to dictate how much volume you can probably do. So people, usually when people get on the table now, we can pretty much tell you whether they're going to be able to handle high volume or not.
Okay.
Right? Just the way they feel, muscle tone, joint position. Because if you think about just doing reps after reps after reps, and they have really bad joint position, then chances are they're not going to be able to handle the training that they'll need to get to that next level.
Right. Can you give a specific example of that? Like a specific joint and movement?
I would say probably the shoulders in CrossFit, right? If you have more of an anterior tilted a shoulder, a scapula that's kind of rolling up on the backside of the rib cage. Your overhead position is going to be sacrificed. And the one thing that CrossFit does, even though it is varied, pressing is very, very much pressing just kind of vertical mostly, mm-hmm. right? And so you have to think about repeating that effort over and over. Certain muscles are going to get used to doing the job.
Right.
So you're going to lose a little variability within that shoulder, because it's like, well, we have to get really good at this because that's what we're doing all the time. And so from our standpoint is, especially with what Pat does, is how can we build variability to keep the joint position able to use all the range that it needs.
Right.
But then also be able to be really functional when it comes to CrossFit.
What have been the biggest surprises for you guys as you move into this population, right? The functional fitness, competitive CrossFit space. What have been the biggest surprises versus, you know, other populations that you've worked with? This is kind of what you and I were talking about yesterday.
I think the biggest surprise is just kind of the lack of what we call like your movement sphere. You know what I mean? Like you have somebody come in, and what I mean movement sphere is your ability to move your body three-dimensionally in space with just under gravity. You know what I mean? Like, how well do you just move under gravity? Can you do a lunge? Can you do a bodyweight squat? You know, can you take your arms underneath your head? Like, real simple stuff. And people come into the gym and they just don't have these prerequisites, and they don't have a good foundation of movement yet.
Right. We were talking yesterday about an athlete that has placed nationally in weightlifting, right? And yet you asked her, can you do a push-up? And she said, of course I can do push-ups. Yeah. And she got down, and what happened?
Yeah, she got down and she really couldn't do a push-up effectively. Her shoulders drastically internally rotate. She loses core stability. She can't activate her glutes. She can't do all these basic fundamental things in one of the simplest exercises, yet she's doing most complex movements that at least I know, which is snatches, cleans, you know, a ton of overhead positional stuff. And it's like, do you have the fundamentals down first before you want to go do all the complex movement?
This is such an important topic in this community, because the answer, or the people's mentality, even a lot of coaches' mentality, is it really doesn't matter as long as they're getting the work done, right? We'll take a muscle up, for instance. Like, if they can get up to the top, it doesn't matter how they get up there, they're at least getting up there. But from your perspective, from a long-term development standpoint and a long-term, like, longevity standpoint, what's going on? Like, why do they need to be able to do these fundamental movements correctly?
Yeah, I mean, I think that example is great, because I think you can get to the top being very specialized, but how long can you stay at the top, right? I think most athletes want to stay at the top for a good long period of time. Mm-hmm. And I think for us, it's how can we extend that? And by extending that, that means there has to be these general principles or movements that I think that they need to be proficient at.
Yeah. I think one strength coach that really kind of affected me was when I went to go visit Jim Ratcliffe in Oregon, and he had, you know, athletes that would be doing the same fundamental movements that they did as a freshman, as a senior, and until you showed that you had the prerequisites of movement, he's not going to move you along. And I kind of think that's kind of the same philosophy that me and Aaron have. It's like, okay, can you maintain core trunk stability, like on the ground? You know what I mean? Can you?
Yeah. What's an example of an exercise that
like an all four, you know, an all four like kind of cat position? You know what I mean? And then can you extend your hip and turn on your glute? You know, when it's supposed to? Can you even take your pelvis from that anteriorly rotated position that we see every day to a more neutral position? You know, when you lift, can you squat with a pelvis that's not going to go through a ton of different ranges of motion, whether that be anterior or posterior? Can you move with a neutral pelvis? Can you maintain your trunk stability? Can you squat without your rib cage externally rotating? Okay. And then we go down this huge rabbit hole of, well, if you can't squat, you know, without externally rotating your rib cage, you know, then are you really turning on the muscles that you think you're turning on when you're squatting? Ever think, oh, I'm going to do squats, so I'm going to turn on my glutes and my hamstrings? Well, your position is going to dictate that. And if you can't maintain position, then what are you really doing? You're going to like Aaron was saying, you're going to consistently beat up those tissues. You know what I mean? And then for us, it all comes back to, for me, all this comes back to my number one job, especially as a collegiate strength coach, wasn't to get athletes better. It's to keep them healthy. And I think we kind of lose sight of that, you know, in the CrossFit realm. If your team goes into the games and they're hurt, you know, you're not going to do very good.
Right.
So what's your number one job? That's to keep your athletes healthy. And I think if we kind of focus on that and say, okay, what's going to be best for this athlete's long-term development? Okay, well, we're probably going to need to, you know, be able to depress the scapula. We're going to need to be able to squat, you know, with a neutral position of our rib cage and our pelvis. You know, and if I do that, I know that my athlete's going to have a better chance of staying healthy throughout the season. Mm-hmm. And that's our main goal.
Well, it's really interesting, because in CrossFit, the training is the same as the sport. So in football, for instance, we were talking about football, you know, you have your weight, your stuff in the weight room, your strength and conditioning, but that's like 5%, if that, of the entire equation, more like 1%, right? With 99% being the on-field practice. So it does, I think it makes it harder for coaches to put that all in perspective. Like they treat it like they're training football players. Right. And they just constantly beat them up. I think your example of Oregon, like Oregon is one of the best organizations on the entire planet. And yet these guys are pounding the fundamentals so much. Same thing at LSU. Right. We have guys that can do, they come in and they can back squat 600-700 pounds, but they can't do a proper body weight squat. So you have to back them off, and they don't put a bar on their back again until they can do a proper body weight squat. So this is a really long conversation, what we're talking about. So I want to just get into some kind of actionable items that people can implement today. So I think there are kind of two different types of people. One, it's perfect scenario, right? These are people that they hear this and they're going to do whatever you say, right? And those are the people that have, the 120-year plan. They want to be able to run and jump and play for, 50, 60, 70 more years. But they also realize that's the best for my competitive future as well. But then there's the other portion of the population that is going to hear this, and they're not going to stop doing muscle ups. They're not going to stop doing snatches, and that's okay, right? We know that's going to happen. So first off, what's perfect case scenario? Like what can people implement today? And I'm talking about we want to make some generalizations, because obviously everyone's going to be different. But what are some things that you think most CrossFitters can implement today? And then what are some things that, if they're going to continue doing those high level movements, those very technical movements, what can they still do to minimize risk?
Well, I think probably the first thing is we're looking at, can we not have an extended rib cage? Can we have a neutral pelvis, right? And I think PRI usually does that the best. So you can go on YouTube and look at 90-90 hip lift with some breathing.
And that's Postural Restoration Institute. Okay.
Yep. And then also probably the all four belly lift, as well. And those things are just real fundamental movements that everybody can do 2 or 3 times a day. It doesn't take very long to do at all, right? And a lot of it is, can you feel internal obliques, right, doing their job when you breathe, and especially when you exhale, right? A lot of times people, when they do these exercises, when we first teach them, they can't feel anything, right? And if we're thinking, especially in CrossFit, having weight on your shoulders, we want to make sure that the core is a good foundation. So I'd say, like, at the bare minimum, those are probably two exercises to definitely start with.
Since these guys don't have an expert with them to make sure they're doing it correctly, are there any like common mistakes people make with those two exercises?
Yeah, I think it's when you start implementing the breathing.
Right.
So you might get into that kind of all four cat position, and then as soon as you take a breath, you have to go through extension to take that breath. And then that should be a big red flag for you. If I can't get in this position and breathe in this position, which breathing's the most fundamental thing in life, then should I really be doing this?
Right.
And so I think we see people get in certain positions and they hold their breath and they can't take a deep breath. I had a basketball kid yesterday that, for the first time ever, he took like a diaphragmatic breath. He's like, wow, that felt really cool.
Nice.
And I think that's kind of what it's all about, is just, if you can't breathe in a position, you shouldn't be moving in that position. Mm-hmm. That would probably be the first one.
And guys, these are all going to be in the show notes at brutestrengthtraining.com/podcast. Keep going.
Maybe like from the physiological perspective, what do you see kind of CrossFit?
Well, I would say the next step after probably just the basics, right, is how can you then introduce variability, right? And that could be variability just in your warm-up, right? Are you exploring different ranges of motion? I think obviously gymnastics bodies have done a really good job of introducing that into CrossFit. But I think you can even take it even further too. A lot of the stuff that even Pat does with applied functional science, right, with the Gary Gray stuff, is it's interesting, and it's something that I think you can easily use for warm-ups or even cool downs in CrossFit.
Yeah. I think if you look at the body from all three planes, sagittal, frontal, and transverse, CrossFit's dominated by the sagittal plane. Mm-hmm. So any opportunity that you get in your warm-up to experience a different plane, frontal plane, transverse plane movements, all that's going to come back to give you more in the sagittal plane where you really want it. Mm-hmm. The only thing is that when we think about, like, warm-up's a great example. You know, how many people come in, do the same warm-up every single time, and the way that our body adapts is through frequency and force. So for me, as a college strength coach, I was like, oh, wow, my dynamic warm-up is super important because that's going to give me a ton of repetitions with my athletes. So if you're a CrossFit coach and you're like, well, I really don't know how to fit this into programming, just start tweaking your dynamic warm-up, because that's going to give you a ton of frequency, a ton of variability, and say, okay, in my warm-up, how many different movements are in the sagittal plane, and then how many movements are in the frontal and transverse? And I guarantee you, most of the coaches, it's all sagittal plane based.
Right.
And the more time that you spend laying down, you know, stress through those same lines of connective tissue, the less variability your body has and the higher chance for injury.
Right.
So the more variability, at the end of the day, get as much variability as you can in your warm-up, and you're going to help your athletes long-term.
And I think you can also use that warm-up definitely as a movement screen too, right? So for us, when we do the eval process, a lot of the stuff we probably put in to our evaluation is the stuff that we'll repeat in warm-ups. Mm-hmm. That way us as coaches can kind of see, oh, wow, they can't get into that left hip, or, oh, man, they're struggling right now with overhead stuff. That gives us cues to what to work on.
Right. I think one of the reasons that a lot of coaches in this community are hesitant to implement multi-plane work is they think it has no correlation to the movements, right? It's too far away from the movements that we're doing, but they don't understand what you just said, that you're just overstressing tissues by moving in the same exact plane over and over and over.
So I'll give you a quick example. So if we look at rotation at the lumbar spine, you know, there's not much rotation there. It's say between 3 and 5 degrees, right? So I look at it as, if I never rotate this athlete, you know what I mean, and take them through that 3 or 5 degrees, then if they lose one or two, it's like, and we're like, oh, well, you don't need a lot of rotation there, but you lost over 50% of your available rotation at your lumbar spine.
Right.
So then, you know, when you do a deadlift, when you do an overhead squats, and you slowly start losing that range of motion, we're talking to a guy who's had issues in his lumbar right. spine, you know, I'm sure you'd probably want to keep as much rotation as you possibly can. So when you really understand, you know, the way the spine works, you start to realize, like, wow, I want to use all the available motion that it has. And it just goes back to your goal. What's my goal? Keep people healthy. Mm-hmm. You know, if I don't keep people healthy, they don't perform well. So I think, does that kind of,
oh, give absolutely. You, give yeah. You that's such there? A great point too. I think, in nutrition and training, thankfully there's more and more focus on what we do now. What we do today is going to have an effect on us 50 years down the line. And thankfully, a lot of, like, big time, you know, either podcasters or scientists are bringing it to the forefront of, like, we have to be focusing on preparing ourselves for the future right now. So I love it. Let's talk about the Omega Wave. What is it? How did you get into it? And how are you using it?
Yeah, well, the Omega Wave is pretty much a Russian invention. And then,
so you know it's good.
Yeah, for sure. And then they actually use that system in essence to monitor astronauts in space, right? That's where, like, a lot of the research came from in the 1960s. And somebody was really smart and was all like, hey, this is probably going to be a nice business and a company, right, to start monitoring elite athletes. They've compiled, I think, over hundreds and hundreds of thousands of data points on professional athletes, actually all athletes from all different walks of life and around the world. And it gives you norms, and it gives you pretty much all the metrics you might need from a central nervous standpoint, right? So we get to look at, like, a DC or very low frequency brainwave, which gives us, like, neurological potential, right? It also helps us out with understanding, is the athlete going to be receptive to learning, coordination, to our cues? If we see that DC potential low, I think us as coaches, we've all seen it where we're talking to an athlete and they're just not there. They're just not syncing up the cues, or they're not syncing up the coordination very well. And it could be things that they've done every day prior, but that day was off. Well, this just gives us one aspect to look at to see, okay, we might need to maybe use plan B on paper because the athlete can't do plan A, right? And then from other than the CNS, we also have like heart metrics, right? We get to look at obviously the HRV stuff that's popular out right now, but we get to look at pretty much every metric of HRV from high frequency to low frequency, which is really nice.
Especially that's heart rate variability for those of you who have not heard of that.
Yeah, and then probably the big thing for us, since we use the team system, is being able to look at these other fundamental systems, like what your breathing's looking like, right? How's the brain perceiving the effort when you breathe, right? So is it hyper-functioning? Is it hypo-functioning, right? Those are all things that are going to drive our intervention as well. Detox, so is the athlete hydrated? What's the athlete doing nutritionally, right? And then also the hormonal score as well on the CNS. And this kind of gives us that dashboard on the car. If something awry pops up, then Omega Wave usually tells us, and that's when we can dig deeper. Do we need to do a nutritional recall? Do we need to look at improving somebody's respiratory system, whether it might be posture, or maybe it's a respiratory muscle endurance issue, right? Which is kind of common in CrossFit. Or is the hormonal system off? We might need to do blood work to see how far are we pushing the athlete from a physiological standpoint.
Right. What commonalities, if any, have you seen in CrossFit athletes by using this system?
Well, we know kind of what the good profile looks like, right? And then the not so good profile is usually when the respiratory system is either in a very extreme hyperfunction or hypofunctioning standpoint. That means they're either going to panting, like right off the bat, too soon, right? Which some people could say that might be more of a stress reaction. Therefore, they're maybe not recovering day to day because they're always underneath a very low grade stress. Mm-hmm. And I would also say is that the hormonal system is usually low because I think a little bit, to be really good, you have to tell your body that you don't feel pain and you don't feel stress, right? That's a characteristic that CrossFitters usually are really good at. The only problem is that when you detach from listening to the body, sometimes you don't guide training the way you need to from an individual standpoint. And so it just gives us an outlook to say like, hey, some of these physiological systems are off and maybe we need to like do a plan B or another intervention to help them kind of reboot their performance.
I think for me, the biggest thing it did, especially in the collegiate setting, is I would think that, okay, well, I'm putting this 6-week plan together and when we're done, my athletes are going to be stronger, you know? And really, I was guessing. We've right. always been guessing. And this was the first time, you know, when I was at Maryland, Aaron was one of the first people I called. I was like, hey, I want to get a Mega Wave. I want to learn how you help athletes with this thing. And it was amazing just to see how much I was forced to kind of change what my plan was based off the individual, you know? And if I saw an athlete came in that was super stressed, it's like, well, what's my job? My job is, once again, keep them healthy. You know what I mean? So if I know that they're not going to adapt to the training stress today, then what am I really doing? Am I helping them or am I hurting them? And this just gives me, you know, a window, and it also forces me to check myself. Like, am I actually making people better, or are they just kind of getting stronger and I'm just beating the shit out of them? You know what I mean?
Right.
And at the end of the day, I want athletes to come into our facility and get better every single day.
Right.
You know what I mean? And that might just be coming in and getting some recovery work in and maybe working on, you know, some very small, simplistic stuff. Or it might be coming in and we're going to kick your ass today because your body's ready for it. Mm-hmm. But it puts the onus back on the athlete.
Right.
Is one thing we see all the time is how many athletes we have come in and we test their Omega Wave and their metabolic reaction index is a 1 or a 2.
Yeah.
That means they're starving themselves. And so I had, especially with like the high school athlete that comes in, oh, I want to get bigger. Well, are you even eating enough? Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? If you're not eating enough, then what I do doesn't really matter.
Yeah, no effect. Are there any differences that you see in this population than your high school athletes and your collegiate athletes? I think one you said was the respiratory distress.
Yeah. It's all just a different degree. I think with CrossFitters, sometimes the really good ones have very good heart characteristics or metrics, right? Like I can say that pretty much all the guys that were on the Carhu team this year, all their Omega Waves look very similar, and all you guys also place in the top 20 in regionals, right? Or very well for our region. And you have a resiliency, right? So in other words, you guys can handle, you know, kind of the day-to-day pounding, right? And then the heart's not going to be your limiter. And I think that that's usually a very strong asset that CrossFitters have, or the good CrossFitters have. And I think from an athlete standpoint, that might be different than the CrossFitters, that usually CrossFitters have a very low central nervous system potential because you guys are kind of grinding all the time. You're not really going high output and then kind of like low output, high output, low output, which we see with the sprinters or whatever. And so with athletes, we really want to kind of drive up that CNS and neurological potential. We should see that sucker kind of climb because we want the athletes to be very neurally driven. Mm-hmm. And I think with CrossFit, with the volume, it's really hard to do that.
Right. So what are some ways other than reducing volume? Actually, before I even say that, I'll say, I think mine was actually really high, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So, and one of the reasons for that is my training this year was not even half of what it used to be. And I felt fresh every single day I went into the gym. I felt great for all the open workouts. So I felt phenomenal, and I never dreaded going to the gym. And in the past, I definitely did get a little overtrained from some of that volume. And so, you know, I'm understanding what you're saying.
Yeah.
You want to talk about oxygen consumption and moxie and what you're seeing? Because I thought that was pretty interesting.
Well, wait, before we go into that, what are some ways that people can raise that score, right? Raise their neural drive.
I think if you just have parity in your work, right? So in other words, is one day really high intensity, right? Like could be from a cardiovascular standpoint or even from a central nervous standpoint, right? Even though everything we do is from a central nervous standpoint, but is it high outputs, right? Is it Olympic lifting? Is it like the max strength stuff? Mm-hmm. Maybe it's coordinative stuff.
The really short Metcons could be higher intensity.
Yeah. And then on the next day, is it kind of a generally like, it could even be high volume, but is it a low stress, right? I think if you have parity in your days, then that sets up the brain to recover. Right. And some days, and that's what's fun about the Omega Wave, is we can kind of then look at and see, okay, does this person need to work out really hard twice a week? Or do they need to work out hard three times a week? And do they need to have, like, on the off days, how much low level activity do they need to recover those processes so we can do high intensity exercise again? Because I think at the end of the day, high intensity is the big driver. So if you can put more intensity to your workouts, you're probably going to end up having good adaptation.
Absolutely.
And so I think the one thing you can do is like, can we go back to listening to the body, and can you have parity in your work?
It's so funny too, man, because 99.9% of people listening to this, they're training for the open. And what is the open? It's a 5 to 15 minute workout once a week, but they're training 3 hours a day for this one, you know, very high intensity, Metcon, and they're wondering why they're not able to have that real push that they see some other athletes have.
I think it's an emotional and mental drain too, right? They then become unemotional when it comes to high intensity stuff, and then the body has to respond come the open. The open's like, hey, like, think about how much mental stress is happening during that open for them, for that one workout, and how much they're putting into it from an emotional standpoint. And I think you almost need to train that way, in essence, through the year. But to do that, you have to give yourself enough rest so you can come into that day and be more emotionally and mentally involved in the workout.
I think Aaron does a good job always telling athletes, and this goes back to kind of what you were saying, like people are preparing for the open, and that's how many days away? 300 some days?
9 months.
Yeah, 9 months. So right now, what are you doing to prepare yourself for the open? You know what I mean? Like, as a collegiate strength coach, you look at the national championship and you work your programming backwards from there because that's where you want to be. So how many people are saying, okay, I'm going to work on my lowest hanging fruit, my biggest weakness now, 9 months out, and let me improve that, you know? And Aaron always is telling athletes, let's find what your lowest hanging fruit is, and then we work on that, and then we retest you, and then we work on that. And if you're constantly working on your lowest hanging fruit, by the time that open comes around, you're going to be a way better athlete than you were last year.
Right. It really just takes discipline and some humility, right? Because people want to continue doing the highly technical movements. They want to be the best in the gym every single day. And so it's very tempting to continue doing what you've always done. But luckily, people are going to hear this you know, with about 9 months left, and they can do those things that we've, you know, we started the conversation with. They can get their posture right first off, and then they can attack the season with the idea that, you know, we're going to ramp up the volume as we go along, and intelligently, so that I peak for the open.
Yeah.
What are a couple things that you guys are doing now that you just started in the last couple of years that are having the biggest effect on athletes?
Well, I mean, I know we're probably sounding like a bunch of tech guys, but I would say that the Moxie stuff was Moxie monitors. It just looks at oxygen saturation in the muscle, right? So I can put on different monitors all on different muscles, workable muscles, obviously. And we can see how the body is transporting and using oxygen, right? What's interesting with that now is that if, along with the table assessment and then also doing the Moxie assessment that we end up doing for the team, there is a specific trend that always pops up that shows me that, oh, wow, these athletes have the ability to do really well in CrossFit. And just to keep it simple, it's like, can they desaturate oxygen down to the lowest level? And then can they reboot it back up very, very fast? So it's almost like repeated effort.
So what the hell does that mean, Aaron?
So that means this. So in other words, that means, so the test just in general that we use could be on an Aerodyne or a rower, and they have the Moxie monitor on, and you're going to haul ass as fast as you can till I see oxygen pretty much go bye-bye, you know, in the working muscle. And then I'm going to have you rest, right? And then I'm going to see how fast it takes for O2 in that muscle to go back up to baseline. And I'm going to have you do it again, right? I'm also taking power output the whole time. Some of the best athletes, at least the ones that we've tested that are in the region, right, that go to this gym, they can all last and do that for an hour at a very, very high power output rate. Actually, most of it's above 80%. That usually means that they have a very good ability to repeat efforts, high intensity efforts. And we just got done talking how the open is a very short duration, you know, relative and high intensity. And so if they have that prerequisite from an internal physiology side, that means they have the foundation to do CrossFit really well.
Mm-hmm.
And it allows us to screen out people that maybe have other issues. Maybe their respiratory system can't do the work. In other words, they can't breathe and actually bring in O2 to the working muscle very well. And then we can change breathing characteristics, or maybe
such as what does that look like? Changing breathing characteristics.
Well, again, we use a device. It's called the Spiro Tiger, and it allows us to alter. Well, it's just simple. It's just like it allows us to do the same things you do with the barbell. So, in other words, if you want to improve coordination in an ollie lifting, right, you're going to do coordinative efforts with the barbell, right? Skill work. You can do the same thing with your breathing with the Spiro Tiger. If it's max strength effort type stuff, right, with the barbell, you can do the same thing with the Spiro Tiger. I'm trying to improve forced expiration with the Spiro Tiger. And if it's endurance, which I feel most CrossFit athletes probably lack in the more muscular endurance ability of the respiratory system, then we can train that. And the great thing is we can train that without training any other muscles. Right, so the last thing CrossFitters need is more muscular work.
Right,
and so this is the way for us to do that without really affecting the change of what the coach is programming or anything else. It's just another layer.
Right. What's something else that y'all have implemented in the last couple of years?
I think for me, it's just looking at all these different systems that have a tremendous amount of success with athletes, which is, you know, the Gary Gray AFS, Applied Functional Science. That's kind of my movement foundation. And then obviously looking at PRI and saying, hey, what does PRI do that's really good? You know what I mean? Postural Restoration Institute. And what can I use from that, and what fits into kind of my fundamental principles?
Right.
And then let's look at DNS, and what can I take from DNS?
What
and
is then, DNS?
Dynamic Neuromuscular Stabilization.
Okay.
And then what can I take from FRC, Functional Range Conditioning? And how can I, and then obviously I'd probably say the biggest thing that's really me and Aaron have dove into is just kind of osteopathic medicine, you know what I mean? And what can I take from all
just
these?
Just dipping your toe in.
Yeah, just dip. I want to dip my toe in everything because everybody gets results,
mm-hmm.
you know? And I want to know, well, why does this group get really good results with this population? Because the more tools that we have in the toolbox, the more we're going to be able to help people. And that's what it comes down to. It's not being a master of I'm never going to be a master at any of those.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But I can promise you this. I remember when I was a younger strength coach and AFS was my foundation, I kept running into these roadblocks and I didn't understand why. And I was like, man, I feel like there's something going on like in this area that I don't understand yet. And I mean, kind of selfishly, I don't want to run into roadblocks anymore.
Right.
You know, I kind of want to, I want to be able to look at somebody and say, okay, well, this is what's going on. I can use this tool to help this individual. So really it's just me and Aaron kind of just sitting down and saying, okay, well, what do we see in this person and how can we make them better?
Right.
You know, and what, how many tools do we have? The more tools we have, the almost the better it is, you know, and then kind of almost perfecting your craft around those kind of different buckets.
Right.
Well, I think that's what's hard in the fitness. I would say even in the business spectrum, in the sense of that, like most people in the fitness performance side, they have like a niche or they have like a guru type feel, right? And they're very kind of absolute in their ideas and say, well, no, this will work, I promise, right? But it's seductive because when somebody has that kind of confidence in one modality, you're like, this is going to work, right? Mm-hmm. But from our standpoint, we really want to look at it as like, you know what, there's no way we can put our hat on one thing. And each individual coming in, can we put our ego aside so that we can just look at the athlete like a blank canvas and say, hey, we have all these tools back here. We're not in love with any of them. You know, they don't rule us. And can we then transfer that back to what the athlete actually needs? And it right. might sometimes go against our best judgment. You know, I mean, me and him have talks all the time, and sometimes one tool that he might be really good at, you know, we might need to have him to actually be with the athlete and not me, right? And so it's really letting go and saying, hey, what is actually best for the athlete?
Right. What I notice in both of you is this such like curiosity, which, if you look at masters of anything, of any craft, that's what they have, right? Cultivated curiosity. Have you guys always felt this driven to learn more? And if not, what changed? How did that evolve for you?
I'd probably say the beginning of that was when I walked in University of Texas weight room for the first time. I think I was really into kind of like Michael Boyle stuff, FMS, going to perform betters, kind of, I was on a very traditional track. Was about thinking about doing a GA, you know what I mean? And then I think I have this good kind of foundation that you would see in most, now I'm being very, this is typical kind of strength and conditioning.
Yeah.
You know, okay, I got my CSCS. You got all those kind of fundamental pieces, USAW. And then I walk in a weight room and I see people squatting in all different planes of motion. And I'm kind of like, well, what the hell is that? These people don't know how to squat. But really, I didn't know shit. That was the problem, you know? Right. So really, I just never want to walk into a situation and be like, I completely don't understand this. You know what I mean? And I may not agree with why that person's doing it, but if I can learn some of that, then we can at least have an educated conversation. Mm-hmm. So really just comes down to, I want to be able to talk to anybody, you know, and us to have an intelligent conversation. You know, I feel like so many times people are like, well, I'm a PRI person, so why am I going to talk to this person? Mm-hmm. Well, the reason I got into PRI is because somebody else told me that it was all bullshit. So I was like, well, I'm gonna go see what it's all about, you know?
Yeah, I think it's really come down to, I think early on, I just didn't want to be told what to do. And so I wanted to find, what are the base principles? How can I filter information coming in so I can like kind of put up the bullshit flag if I need to?
Right.
Because I think it's hard as a strength coach right now, the internet especially, like, it can lure you in with a lot of information, but you can't filter it. So then you try everything, right? Which that approach works too. But I think if you actually can read research and study really good coaches that are very fundamentals and like principle based, I think that allows you to then open up, right? And to accept new things and use new things. And so for me, that's really been the core idea for my studying is, and all everything I study is like, how can I find the base principles of each of these different, you know, I'd say categories in science or exercise or whatever else, and then expand upon it, you know?
What do you guys, what would you suggest for the young strength coach listening to this? You know, maybe they have an L1, CrossFit L1, or they just got their CSCS and they want to understand how the body works, how it develops, how to, you know, keep people safe and also perform better. What would you suggest for them going forward in terms of education and just their mindset?
I think the book that really changed it for me was Anatomy Trains by Thomas Myers. And it was funny, one of our interns was talking to us today, and when I was at the University of Denver, I had 7 different Olympic sports. And I was a lacrosse player, so he was like, oh, well, you must have known all the lacrosse stuff. I was like, yeah, I felt more comfortable with lacrosse. But he was like, did you know anything about skiing? I was like, I didn't know anything about skiing. So I just went and watched him practice. But the common denominator is that I got an appreciation for human movement. And if you understand human movement, then it doesn't matter what you're doing. It could be CrossFit, it could be skiing, it could be men's lacrosse, you know, or any athlete, or the person walking in the door with back pain. Mm-hmm. But if you take the time to understand chain reaction biomechanics, I'll break that down for you. That's fine. And just, I think Thomas Myers does a good job of breaking down how the body's a connected unit, you know what I mean? And having an appreciation for fascia and how fascia affects the body, and from the proprioceptive standpoint, which then ties back into what Aaron does such a good job of, is understanding the central nervous system. And you're going to go, if you read that book, you're going to go down a rabbit hole pretty quick.
Right.
So
I would also say too, is just find good coaches to learn from. I mean, I think in our journey, you could probably list tons of coaches that we've been able to spend time with and to learn it. And I think it's, try not to find coaches that are hot right now. Try to find coaches that have stood the test of time, right? Before the internet, even. Mm-hmm. They're still out there, I promise, right? And they're really willing to, you know, sit down and have a chat, or even for you to come watch, right? I think that's important, is flash will go, and
right,
the same principles always stay. So finding a good coach that can walk you down that is huge.
It's interesting that, especially in the collegiate scene, I've almost never heard of someone being turned down when asking, hey, can I just come shadow you for a day? Right? Coaches are so willing to let you spend some time with them and ask questions. It's flattering for most people, right? And so I wrote an email to our like newsletter subscribers a while back, like breaking down kind of what I consider the best forms of education. And I said, books are phenomenal and they're one of the best forms of education. But if you can attend a very intensive course, that's probably going to, you know, trump a book. And if you can spend time with someone that's gone through all of this, they could potentially help you skip a lot of levels or a lot of mistakes that you would have made along the way.
Yeah, no, totally agree. And then I think that's now like the benefit of some of the younger coaches, is that like I think they're kind of hip to a lot of that sometimes, and like I can only imagine how many mistakes I'm still making, right? And having good mentors, man, it'll speed you up by 10 years,
right?
It seems like. So
what are some things, just one or two things that you see being commonly done today that is actually bullshit?
Well, early on, it was the breathing mask stuff. That was crazy.
How come? How so?
Well, if you think about it, chances are they're probably taking in their own CO2, you know, with the breathing mask, which obviously is going to, you'll desaturate O2 in that internal environment a lot, but you won't be able to like reload O2. So it'll actually kind of push people either hypo or hyper on the breathing. So it actually will mess up kind of like their homeostasis line, or what the brain is perceiving homeostasis. That's if they're doing it like every day, which, you know, sometimes you still see that.
I saw a guy riding a bicycle, like he looked borderline homeless, and he had one of the masks on.
Yeah. I mean, maybe I have no idea. Yeah, for sure. And I think that, and then I think if we look at the William Hof stuff, I mean, like, I get it from principle, but you're looking at what can actually affect. Some people might not be in the right physiology foundation for that stuff. It's like everybody comes in different. You might be hyper or hypo functioning. You might be normal functioning in the breathing, right? Which then kind of leads you to different modalities. But I think we have to think of things as in what's right for the person and not just what's popular right now. Mm-hmm. You know, and so anything you see that's popular, that's a cure-all, there is no such thing as a cure-all, you know.
Right.
So I think it's the best coaches in the world usually cast a big net, and they're not hung up on one thing.
Right.
Yeah, I hate to be a broken record, but just not seeing enough of the fundamentals. Mm-hmm. The most impressive thing I saw on Instagram recently, I'm not a big social media guy, But every once in a while when I get on there, I was like, oh, wow, look at this athlete with really good squat form. Mm-hmm. That's cool to me. Not like all these fancy exercises that you can do and, you know, what's cool right now. It's like, who knows how to coach the fundamentals really well, you know? That's what's impressive to me. So, once again, it's just don't look for the big fad. Just like Aaron said, look what stood the test of time. You know, some of the best coaches in the world are still doing the same stuff, and they're doing it for a reason. So I would just look to the fundamentals always.
Love it, guys. If people want to work with you in Austin, how can they go about doing so?
Yeah, just visit our website, Train It Up The Vault. It has all our contact info there. And then, we'll get you scheduled up.
Awesome. And then if they want to work with you online, do the same?
Yep, same thing. Yep.
Awesome. Anything else? Where can they follow you on social media?
Ooh, we're kind of social media ghosts. But Facebook, either Aaron Davis or Patrick Estes. We used to have an Instagram account, but, to be honest,
they kicked y'all out.
Yeah, we're kind of like Yoda. We want to be in the back of the cave where nobody knows where the hell we're at. So
that's good business right there.
Yeah, I know. It's terrible.
I'll tell you this. If you're a coach or, you know, you're getting up in this business, I'll tell you what. If you call us and you're like, hey, well, I want to come out and shout at you, hell yeah. Come watch us. We'll definitely say yes. Because I know when I was, you know, an intern and getting up in this business, I would send 4, 5, 6 emails to guys like, you know, Bill Knowles, who's, I think, one of the best therapists in the country. And then just being really lucky to be around smart people like my mentors, Todd Wright, Logan Schwartz, chiropractor in Denver, Nick Studholm. I mean, I could go on and on and on all day of all these people who helped mold me into who I am today. So if you write down a list of, okay, who do I really need to thank for where I am right now? And if that list doesn't have at least 10 people on it, then go find those 10 people. You know what I mean?
Absolutely, man. Look them up, guys. Hit them up. Come spend some time with them. These guys are incredibly intelligent and doing great work. Thanks for making some time today, guys. This was awesome. Show notes are going to be on brutestrengthtraining.com/podcast. And if you haven't already, if you want, you know, some free resources, ebooks, the top podcasts that we have out, sign up for the newsletter at brutestrengthtraining.com. Thanks.
Thank you.